Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Mr. Chris Casso.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And, of course, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Hi, Ben.
How is everybody today?
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, good.
As always.
Pretty good.
Can you hear me?
Give me a weird look.
Can you hear me?
Turn him off.
All right. Is my microphone on?
Yeah, your microphone.
Turn it lower.
Check into that. No. You know.
We have had problems with your microphone in the past.
Yeah, suspiciously.
If anybody listened to the show last week, they didn't hear you for a lot of it.
It's probably all for the best, but at the same time, I put a lot of work into my words.
We're here in the lovely Comics Dungeon at 309 Northeast 45th Street. You can see us on the YouTube. And you've changed the configuration here somewhat.
Just a bit. Make some more space for our book clubs.
Yes.
The podcast table brings it all together.
Yeah.
All right. So you arrange it, rearrange it for events. The last event you had was Free Comic Book Day. How was Free Comic Book Day? Free Comic Book Day.
Very successful.
Yes.
We had a huge line at the door that went down to like the not quite the end of the block, but some good distance.
Mm-hmm. I saw the pictures. They were very impressive.
Yes.
Yeah, and when we opened, everyone was like, yay! Which I don't know if that's happened in previous years. It just felt extra excited this year.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Our traffic was a little different because it was like a horrible traffic day in Seattle that day because it was a beautiful day and it was the start of boating season and there was a Mariners game.
And there was like a road closed.
And then the viaduct stuff. Yeah. So
yeah, we had a lot and yet we still had a very successful Saturday.
We had a lot of kids coming in and we had a fantastic cosplayer and she was Wonder Woman and we have some adorable pictures of her and a little girl wearing the Wonder Woman kind of costume kind of thing, and then Nicole in the background basically just like exploding with
freaking
pure joy.
Out, kind of creeper freak out. It's like this. It's like
can you make that face into the camera?
It's like this.
There you go.
Yeah, it's exactly.
If you want
like
to see
that.
What it is, you should go on
it's
YouTube.
On Facebook.
Silver,
it's
what is
on
her
Facebook
name?
Too.
The cosplayer Sharky Kitty.
That's
Sharky
right,
Kitty.
Sharky Kitty.
And she was fantastic. And we also had Starfire here. And
she was as sweet as Starfire.
She was awesome.
She was very lovely.
Yeah. So that was fun. We had a number of guests and they all were awesome and were great with the kids. And yeah, it was really, 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 really busy.
How do you
really
compensate
oh, yeah.
your cosplayers? Do you compensate them with
we
free
take
comics
care of
on
them.
Free comic book day?
They get free comics, uh-huh. they get their choice, but we try to feed them and give them water and
I mean, I feel like
they're plants.
They're like
actually,
little
they
groots.
Didn't need any.
They're little planted groots.
Nah, but they didn't actually really need any this time. They took some water, maybe. I don't know. But before when we
Sharky
had like
Kitty was very excited to be
yes.
there, and she really
yeah,
enjoyed
she a
being
trooper.
A part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah. Yeah.
So if people wanted to see pictures of from Free Comic Book Day, they should like your page on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Search for Comics Dungeon, or
and she has a page too.
She does, yeah. It's just Sharky Kitty cosplay. I think is all you have to do for a search, and so yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, speaking of events, this is actually the last show that's going to air before the big Panel Jumper Live that's happening in May 27th at West of Lennon.
Why are you pointing at me?
Because it's
you're the guy,
deal, sir.
Yes. So May 27th, 8 p.m. West of Lennon.
Buy tickets for that. You can find them at brownpapertickets.com, or I'm going to put a link in the show notes for this episode, so check it out.
Well, you know, and if you haven't done so already, go over to the Panel Jumper Facebook page and give it a like.
Give it a like.
When you give it a like, you will be privy to all the latest and up-to-date information of what's going on with the live Panel Jumper show, with the Perfect Bound podcast.
It's a great way to stay informed. Liking something on Facebook.
You'll be privy to Cole's darkest secrets.
Yeah.
Do you think? Really?
You should start making some darkest secrets.
I was going to say, don't ask me to work that hard.
If it's a moment of shameless promotion, we will be doing some events for LGBT for June. So look out for that. I'm in the works of it right now. I just want to plant that seed. And then I'm also working on maybe doing some stuff with the Rebirth event that's coming out probably in July. So
And one last shameless promotion, if I may.
Yeah.
We got our newest print. We do an art series where we get different creators to draw something that's themed like Pacific Northwest or Monster. And we have a couple already. We have a tree octopus and a bat squatch. This one is The Warrior Girl in Olympic National Park by Kristen Goodsnuck. And we do it.
Right, that's Hench Girl, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it's the Hench Girl. Right. It's the Hench Girl girl. And the trick with our prints is that for everyone purchase, $5 goes to a charity that we offer a legion of charities for the artist to choose from. This one will go to Hero Rats, which is a really great charity where they train rats to find landmines and also tuberculosis. Wow. And they've
rats
never.
Rats are very smart. They can do all kinds of stuff.
And they've never last a rat in service.
Yep. If they were smart, they wouldn't be searching for landmines.
No, I'd be looking for truffles, man. There's money in truffles. But you can get the pigs to do it.
Bearing the lead here, we've not lost the rat to service.
That's true.
What you just said? Excellent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So can people buy that online, or do they have to come in store for that?
They are online, and they're on our Shopify store, which you get to through our website. And but we have plenty here at the store, as well as a bunch of other exclusive art and covers and things.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this episode of Shameless Self-Promotion is brought to you by... Well, us, because we do this show.
Because we're shameless and shameless. We have things going on.
So like Comics Dungeon on Facebook, go to their website, buy the art, and help the rats work and pay their bills. like the Panel Jumper on Facebook, and buy a ticket to the Panel Jumper Live. You won't regret it. We're going to be there live doing a show.
We didn't really give a rundown of all the exciting guests we have.
No. Do you have that all at the top of your head?
I can probably give you most of them off the top of my head.
I'll fill in the holes.
Okay. All right. So you can look forward to a new play. Written by Gregory Award-winning playwright Wayne Raleigh, based on a story that Wayne Raleigh and our own beloved manager Mike collaborated on. A reboot of a 1448 piece written by Jim Jewell. If you came to the show last time, you were entertained by another one of his pieces.
Don't you mean a rebirth?
A rebirth, a reboot, all those good things. Singer-songwriter Tyshawn, who I'm really looking forward to having be on the show. We got a little bit of burlesque from Verity Germain. Apparently, she's doing who's the phase girl from the X-Men?
Shadowcat.
Yes,
Kitty Pryde.
She's doing her Kitty Pryde burlesque.
Kitty Cat.
David Lasky, Eisner Award-winning illustrator, cartoonist David Lasky is going to be with us for an interview. You can see all four of us do a live Perkbound podcast recording. Who am I leaving out?
You are leaving out Jose and the Hawk from Rachel Jackson of Vox Fabuli.
You want to give them a little bit of the background on that piece?
We had two characters in an episode of The Panel Jumper, episode 4, An Odd Duck. One was Jose and one was a hawk. And at one point I said, let's have Jose and the Hawk up next. And everybody thought it would make a great like noir TV show. So that's what happened.
So Rachel Jackson of Vox Fabuli thought that is a marvelous idea. And she ran with it.
She did run with it. I think that's it.
Reading myself and world famous comedian Emmett Montgomery.
World famous. And so much more prizes, trivia, come in costume and get $1 off your first drink at the bar. All right, let's get on with the show, shall we?
And that's it for today. Thanks for joining us on Perfect Bound Podcast.
All right. In bringing it down in sad news, Darwin Cook passed away recently, and you could not go online and not see this gentleman's name. I will admit, I did not know who he was before he passed away. All I know is that on his blog, it was announced that he had cancer and was in palliative care. This was on Friday, May 13th, which is the first anybody had ever heard of this. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturday, May 14th, it was announced that he had passed.
Yeah, David Bowie'd it. Pretty much.
So yeah, exactly. And people are mourning him in the comics world as much as people mourn David Bowie. Give me a quick like rundown of who he was, why everybody loves him.
Well, he had an art style that was very much in the vein of like the Batman animated art style. Mm-hmm. And he had a love for like the Silver Age of comics, and he really brought that aspect to a lot of his work. And he told very lighthearted and fantastically put together stories.
There's something you don't see in modern comics is this. He revisited authenticity and kindness in his stories.
So he was a writer and illustrator.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
there was, there was action and violence without brutality.
Yeah.
He was an exquisite draftsman and illustrator. I loved the way he crafted his female illustrations. They look like real women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like in New Frontier, yeah, his Wonder Woman.
It's one of my favorite books.
Yeah, she was great.
And there's also an animated film based on New Frontier, which is totally worth watching.
And he had a love for like 50s and 60s crime and noir style. He did adaptations of the Richard Stark Parker novels. Mm-hmm. And those are just fantastic to go through. Yeah, so it's just somebody of that magnitude of skill and storytelling who should have actually been in charge of most of DC at some point. Mm-hmm. Who understood legacy. You know?
Considering, too, that he really didn't like that dark and gritty modern stuff. He thought that was not great, so that's why he was always going towards the time where it was a little bit more innocent, a little bit more pure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But he had a fondness for noir, which is where all of that springs from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the guy was all cheesy cheapness and light, because he wasn't. He just he had
balance.
He had a respect for kindness and authenticity in his stories. There was a gentleness to them. The point was not violence. The point was his stories. A friend of mine posted online the other day about that he thought that Darwin Cook's depiction of Martian Manhunter was the first time that art ever actually got Martian Manhunter, and it's the sequence from New Frontier where John Jones is watching TV, and he's becoming every different person he's watching on TV, from Bugs Bunny to Bogey to whoever, and that's when art got the multifaceted aspect of Martian Manhunter and what set that character apart from everybody else.
He also did a great run of Will Eisner's Spirit, and he got the character. Like when you see Frank Miller's production of The Spirit, the movie,
you didn't get it.
But Darwin Cook, whenever he took on somebody else's property, he always figured it out. What was at the core of that property?
Well, he treated it with a certain amount of honor, too, which Frank Miller thought he was doing. But, I can't say, because I never saw the film. People scared me off of ever seeing that film. I don't know if I'll ever sit through it. I don't think I have to at this point.
Yeah.
If I wanted to get into Darwin Cook's work, where should I start?
DC had let the New Frontier go out of print. They are bringing it back to print. Hopefully it'll be with some of the additional after material.
How many parts of that? Four?
Five. But if you include, like, there was an aftershot thing that he did, like, a year or two later, a couple years later, that may be, like, six.
I'm going to give Ben the background on New Frontier. What that is.
The New Frontier was basically him showing the transition from the Golden Age to the Silver Age. And it was, it wasn't necessarily like a new in canon, like here's the Silver Age, here's everything that actually we do count as continuity. It was like a standalone story, just trying to get the tone of like the birth of a new age of superheroics. Mm-hmm. And, so that one focuses on like the Flash and Wonder Woman and Superman and basically the first time the Justice League kind of gets together, because it's sort of an adaptation of when they first deal with, I don't want to spoil it, but one of like the first villains that they ever really dealt with. It's about like Martian Manhunter coming to Earth and stuff like that. And also dealt with like the Challengers of the Unknown and the Losers, which is one of the best like forgotten parts of DC. The original four loser characters were a bunch of there was a Captain Stormy, I'm gonna black out,
these
Captain
World
Savage,
War
II. World War II guys, and they were basically sent on suicide missions all the time. They're kind of like the original precursor to the Suicide Squad. So he kind of included them. He included like every little corner, and he even tried to find a new way to insert a background story to the character of Steel, the Superman character from the Death and Rebirth of Superman, and included that into the civil rights movement of the time and stuff like that. So that would be a really good starting point. There's another standalone Batman story he did called Batman Ego, and that's a great one to hunt down. There's a DC did a series called Solo, where each issue focused on one creator and they could do whatever they want with any characters that DC owned and short stories. Mm-hmm. And so he had one, and he focused a lot on Slam Bradley, who was a a character that appeared in Detective Comics before Batman. And he was just a gruff detective who, you know,
Hardboiled detective.
Yeah.
Do they keep those solos in stock though?
Solo is available in the hardcover, which means
so they are
reprint those in the hardcover.
Yeah.
It was a fascinating series to get because of the range of artists that they gave the spotlight to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. because you go from Darwin Cook to Sergio Aragonés back to some modern artists.
Mike
Alward had one. Yeah.
Matt Wagner.
I thought Wagner might have, but McCarthy I can't remember.
I want to point out that one of my favorite and Darwin Cook books is the only redeeming aspect of the
Watchmen,
and that's the Minutemen series that he did, which is absolutely gorgeous. Which is, unlike the rest of the books that were all part of that series, is an original story that does not, at some point, hinge or overlap with Moore's original text. The Minuteman story is. It's about these unpowered vigilantes in a real world context, high drama, beautifully drawn, beautifully drafted, and seriously the only redeeming aspect of that whole debacle that was before Watchmen. It's beautiful. It's unfortunate it has that the before Watchmen tag on it because in and of itself was a terrific series.
He also did a Catwoman graphic novel called Selina's Big Score. Mm. And it reads more of like a crime story just starring Selina Kyle and not a Catwoman book. And it co-starred Slam Bradley. So again, there's that kind of going back to the hard-boiled stuff. Yeah. So yeah.
All right. Well, Darwin Cook, he was only 53. Mm-hmm. Moving on. The Killing Joke animated adaptation is set to be released digitally July 26th and coming out on Blu-ray and DVD shortly afterwards. It's going to be R-rated.
Yep.
And
it should be.
There's going to be they've added more scenes to fill it out because they wanted it to be longer, I guess, than what the book allowed. A lot of the feedback I've heard from people on my Facebook feed is that after they've seen the trailer, they're like, this just looks like a dumb Batman cartoon. This isn't the Killing Joke.
Interesting.
But I saw this like making of sort of mini documentary where they're like, we wanted to try to mesh the two together, the Batman animated series that everybody knows and loves, but also the fantastic artwork from The Killing Joke. And I don't know if they're gonna succeed or fail. Are you guys anxious to see this? Are you looking forward to it? Are you not? Are you sad it's happening?
I'm not anxious to see necessarily.
I'm like five or six DC cartoons behind.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd probably see Bad Blood because it's got my girl Batwoman in it before anything else.
The DC animated universe has grown progressively more and more violent and distorted and is actually just a more detailed reflection of what we're seeing in the cinematic films.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of families complain that they thought something was an all-age film, and it's at least PG-13, if not beyond.
They're
they'll be surprised and be like,
The Son of Batman
turn
one,
that off.
You know, there was blood, arterial spray.
Aside from the Batman animated series, what else is there in the DC animated universe?
The Justice League series was fantastic.
Okay.
Marvelous.
And the Superman animated. It's all one continuity.
Yeah. Legion of Superheroes was actually, it was short-lived, but it was...
A Young Justice, you guys like it, right?
And the Green Lantern, the CGI.
Oh, the Green Lantern one
was
fun.
Fantastic. That
wasn't bad. Yeah, so there's a few things.
Anything that was a
series. But those are the ones that, those were actually on cable or network television. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the direct-to-video releases.
Yeah.
And like there's that darker animated universe that they're working with. I mean, they did the... they adapted Frank Miller's Dark Knight to a two-film set, which, you know, I'm a hoe.
Now, did those have Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill?
I do not believe.
Because that's the big selling point for The Killing Joke.
Yeah.
Those
two voice actors. That's sending so many confusing messages, as far as I'm concerned. Because the Batman animated series is... Hey, let's face it. It's about as Darwin Cook as you can get. Mm. I mean, it was.
It's so Darwin Cook. It's Bruce Timm.
Yeah. Well, you know, but those guys were cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
You know, they were not. They were concerned about story. They wanted to have these dark elements that threw back to the '40s. You know, and the animation style of that time period and the filmmaking, the cinematic storytelling aspects of that time period. To have Conroy and Hamill voice the Killing Joke, which is like the most violent, perverse of all Batman stories in a lot of ways, is a little bit, you know. No, it's really, it's perverse. We had a whole episode where we talked about this.
Yeah. We did.
No, I'm just trying to think of all, you know, like some of the others and the,
some of the others.
Just different Batman stories that could be considered more violent or more perverse. I don't know. Doesn't matter. But yeah.
I'd love to see, because we talked about this before, Batman Odyssey. Just that, you know.
Just starts with Batman with a banana. Yeah.
And a glass of water.
You know,
with an
I'm
eggs
all
in
over
it.
That thing. Maybe we need to have a stumble bound and like watch an animated or something.
Just animate our own.
All right, moving on. Final bit of pop culture comic book news. Michael B. Jordan has joined the Black Panther standalone movie. Michael B. Jordan, as you know, played Johnny Storm in the latest Fantastic Four movie, and also one of my a character in the first season of The Wire who got axed early on, which I'm very sad about. Spoilers for The Wire if you haven't seen it in
too
the last
late now.
10 years.
It's ruined for you. No.
Anyway, he's joining Lupita Nyong'o. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. Interesting thing is that he's the second Johnny Storm to join the MCU as a different character.
Yes, yes, he is.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'm the only person at this table who's seen Captain America: Civil War.
Not true.
No, you did see it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
This side of the table has.
Okay.
Seen
all right.
It.
Let me rephrase that.
Any Marvel movie that comes out, I will see it opening weekend. Period.
We have a division of beliefs of
a divide.
Of time / caring, too.
So, I have to say, watching the T'Challa story, the Black Panther story in Civil War, I cannot wait for the Black Panther movie.
And is there a release date for that? Have they announced it?
2018. I don't remember. There should be a month and a year. I just don't remember.
Now I got to stay alive to then.
Remember last year we said the same thing.
I know.
Because it's just like, even though I'm getting closer, it feels farther away.
Just so you know,
I cried twice in Civil War, both times because of Black Panther.
I did too, but you know why I did? No, I did when King. No,
is there going to be spoilers?
When he's talking to his father, and I realized we have these characters now in the movies, we have them represented successfully in the movies, and it's just going to keep getting better. That's when I was like, this is filling me with a great deal of hope.
Yep.
And when I get filled with hope, even in comic book worlds,
it floweth over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
I'm the same way.
I do.
I'm the same way.
Like, and that's why I was really excited. I was like, I love that we're going to be depicting these characters. We are going to be giving people of color these opportunities.
Also, I just love that people care about Black Panther in general now, to the point where I might explode and turn into a bunch of stars. Like, it's really hard. It's really hard to contain it. And I'm glad that some people don't care either about comics or Black Panther. Some still don't, because it means that I'll still survive and I won't just, you know, explode.
So,
into the universe.
So the verdict from you guys, Iron Man v. Captain America, Dawn of Vengeance is a lot better than...
I haven't watched BVS, you know, the people versus whatever. Yeah, I haven't watched the Batman one.
All right.
Just side note, there's yet another Suicide Squad trailer or something. I don't know, there's like 12
probably.
Of them. If you watch it, it's pretty much the whole movie.
Really?
From what it seems like, because I saw it during Civil War for the preview.
Oh, so they got like the long form.
And William and I were like, great. Well, now we don't have to watch it. That was fun. It's the best 5 minutes. All thanks, right. DC.
Will Smith was great in that movie.
Oh, he was. He was fantastic.
Okay. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody.
Book Report.
Yeah, I know. It comes so quickly. Cole Hornaday, let's start with you. What did you read this week?
Well, I read the C-3PO one-shot from Marvel Disney, written by James Robinson and drawn by Tony Harris. You know, this is the story of how C-3PO got his red left arm, which I was losing sleep over. And I love this. There's a lot to like about this book, and the least of which is not that this is canon. This is not supposition. This is canon because it comes down from the godhead of Disney and say and says, "Yay, we will accept this as gospel." Verily.
And who is the godhead of Disney these days?
Oh, well, whoever he is, he's frozen in a vault below the Matterhorn.
I just
imagine a head now.
I imagine that the head from the movie Wizard of Oz with Judy Garland, right? And it's Walt Disney's face now. Mm-hmm. There's no man behind the curtain. Just he's like a hologram that they put above, you know, like in big conferences or something, video conferences.
I imagine the robot chicken skit where it's the Walt Disney head put onto a giant robot like tripod with like lasers.
The cannibal that eats children.
Yeah, yeah.
So many options here. But we digress.
It's a real basic story. For some contrived reason, C-3PO and about a half a dozen other robots crash land on this planet. Tony Harris is a marvelous artist, and his style is actually quite fluid.
Like
colors are brilliant in this.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, it's a hell planet. You know, there's big creepy crawly monsters, but there are some interesting discussions that we never really have in the Star Wars universe between robots, or between droids rather, discussing their essence, what it means to, you know, their identity. Because you've got war robots, and you've got protocol droids, and you've got, you know, simple-minded custodial droids and things like that. And it gets kind of existential because, you know, they all acknowledge, or those who are capable of it, at least, that their personalities are dictated by the human beings who made them. So are they genuine beings in that light or not? And then eventually we get to, you know, C-3PO losing his arm and how he replaces it. I enjoyed it.
All right.
I don't want to give too much away, you know. Only
one issue, and there's more?
And there's more.
What?
What?
All right. So
I do recommend it. It's a cool little book.
Excellent. All right. Nicole, what about you? What did you read this week?
I've been reading the Ultimate series in singles. Actually, I don't know where there's a camera anymore. Okay, there you go. I'm just going to move it a lot. The Ultimates has ties to the Secret Wars event that happened for a bazillion years.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ultimates is a group of superheroes that are trying to solve the universe's problems. The first problem is the Galactus problem. He's the destroyer of worlds. And basically, they took him out of the oven too soon. They just needed to bake him a little bit longer to make him the life bringer of worlds. So that's the story in the first two issues. But
I'm assuming you're saying that metaphorically.
He kind of went into a cosmic oven of sorts.
Okay. So are we bypassing the whole Fantastic Four story from back in the day where Reed Richards discovered that Galactus was a celestial force of nature and needed to exist to maintain the balance?
There are still elements of that concept because there are other beings in the universe who are like, you are destroying the way the universe needs to be by doing this with Galactus.
Oh.
So I don't want to give too much away because there's a lot of really cool things in this series.
Because the Shi'ar.
Yeah.
Yes. The Shi'ar are probably kind of pissed off at people because they always are.
Yeah. Well, there's some other people and there's that guy. You see that guy right there?
That's it.
Anyway. So it's got
I have to find out.
Reed Moore, yeah. Blue Marvel. Is it Blue Marvel?
Yeah, what's the Blue Marvel.
The Blue Marvel, which I'm not very familiar with, but I like him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Black Panther, my guy. It's got American Chavez, Miss America, and
Captain Marvel.
And Captain Marvel and
the previous Captain Marvel.
Yes. What's her name?
Monica Rambeau.
So it's got a really interesting team together as well. And besides this issue, the issues before that have always had the team on the first page and Blue Marvel being like, so since we're not the Illuminati, like, you know, those jerks are, we're going to tell you everything that we're doing, you know, in space. And it's like, who? I just imagine people sitting in their living room and hearing some like radio broadcast broadcast. What year are we in? Some video like broadcast, you know, and being like, you're going to what zone with the who what's? You're fighting who? You know, like they're being transparent, but who cares?
Right,
or who knows what you're even saying? Like these are like really intelligent people. Most of them are really intelligent people. So
that's a storytelling device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. There's, anyway, go ahead.
There's a great thing in one of the first issues, too, where they need some help from, like, the new giant man who's not Hank Pym and not Scott Lang.
Yes.
And so they get, like, the help from him, and then he's like, can I go with you on your mission to beyond the furthest reaches of reality? And they're just like, no. Because you've only been on the job for 2 days, and we just can't vet you, and get back to us when you fight Cthulhu. And then when they leave, he's just like, man, I gotta fight Cthulhu. And then like an issue later, they are fighting Cthulhu.
Yeah, so they're going into different realms where there is like actually a realm where there's elder gods just floating around in the nebulous, you know, space. So really cool. If you like sci-fi, and you also want to have something that actually counts towards Secret Wars, what happened there and them all figuring it out, I would highly recommend it. I feel like this is kind of a sleeper title that people are starting to discover more and more. So the trade will be out, I think, in a couple months' time, and I would recommend picking that up. And it's really, really good. It's Al Ewing, and this issue is by Christian Ward, who did the Odyssey series, or who does the Odyssey series, which it's really cool fill-in, but I just almost gave it away. But it's normally Rockefort.
Yeah, Kenneth Rockefort.
Yeah, so he's an old school guy, and his stuff's pretty interesting, but I kind of like this fill-in artist a little bit better, but I like modern stuff.
Cool.
So that's it.
Cool, The Ultimates. Highly recommended. Blah, 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 blah. Pick it up. Blah, blah, blah. All right, Chris Cassell, what about you, sir?
I am about to finish reading Lucy Nisley's... Nicely? Nisley.
Nicely?
Nisley?
Anyway.
Lucy's Something New, Tales from a Makeshift Bride. And she's done a series of books that are like her travelogues, The Age of License, Displacement, and French Milk. And then she's also done another graphic memoir about her life in the kitchen because her mother was a chef. And basically, they're just piece of life stories. They're just about her, you know, different parts of her life.
Yeah, like travelogues or diaries or something.
And they're just very charming and very genuine. And this one's kind of like, it starts going over details about her life meeting her future husband, which like had been mentioned in previous books, but this one's actually dealing with the moment when they finally figured out that they were getting married, and then about all the details of getting ready to get married and how she made it her own. So like, there's not really like a plot.
But there's good humor in there.
Oh, there's great humor.
Yeah,
in there.
Like there's a point where she's talking about how like the bachelorette parties are just ridiculous, where you like, it's total, you know, drunken silliness. And then the next day you're like, I commit thee to the, you know, it's like this weird adult ritual thing.
And like between chapters, she has these great sequences where she focuses on something. And so like one chapter's about the ring and she's got Sauron there. And he's like, one ring to rule them all. And then like the lady's just like, and in the darkness, steal the covers. And, you know, stuff like that. And so it's
cute
a lot. Yeah, it's really cute. There's a great part where she's talking about like, yeah, I'm sure that when we were separated and, you know, we're seeing other people, that there was a long line of beautiful women that wanted to be with him and do all this. And like, she's overdrawing the sequence. And then like his character shows back up and he's just like, what are you doing? And she's just like, I might be jealous. It's my book. You know? So it's really, really just genuine and fun. It's only $19.99. It's a good, dense read. It's published by First Second Press, who everything I've ever picked up from them has been quality. Yeah. It's usually they do kind of all ages stuff. Like this is pretty much all ages, kind of.
Into teen,
into
maybe,
teens, yeah.
You know?
So yeah, it's just if you want something that's a lot of fun and you know, yeah.
Question.
All right.
Yes. It seems like this guy was in her other logs. Is that like the guy that she met in one of the travel logs?
No, but she mentions like there was the Swede where like he crashed her apartment because like he came all the way from Sweden to live with her. And she was just like, this isn't cool anymore. But this is like her actual like she was dating this guy for a while. They were going to probably get married. Bad things happened. They went away. She met the Swede. Other books happened. And then they got back together.
Interesting. So you can follow her whole life through these
pretty
books.
Pretty much, yeah, yeah.
True story.
So, yeah, just lots of fun.
All right. Cool. Thanks, Chris. And that's Book Report. And before we get to quiz time, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. You see everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. You can also come to The Panel Jumper live Friday, May 27th, west of Lennon, westoflennon.com, thepaneljumper.com. Find it online. You can find it. Cole looks like he wants to say something.
He needs more sangria.
Oh, he needs more sangria. We also retreated to some lovely sangria today. Thank you, Chris. I forget who is responsible for the sangria, but Tell them thank you.
Yes.
It was a beautiful human being.
Yes, a beautiful human being.
She's wonderful.
All right. And she probably brought it to here at the Comics Dungeon at 319 Northeast 45th Street here in beautiful downtown Wallingford. Or you can also, if you want to buy something, go to come here or go to comicsdungeon.com. And now it's time for quiz time. And today our quiz questions come to us from Cole Hornaday. Lay it on us, Cole.
What? For me?
Yeah, man.
Okay, well, this week's trivia question theme is corporations we love and dread, or I sold my soul to the company store. So, now I'm going to give you a description of the context of the corporation and ask you to identify them.
Each question is worth 16 tons.
Oh, Ben Lawrence, you just, sometimes you exceed genius. You're marvelous. Yay! Okay, when Detroit cop Alex Murphy was gunned down by a team of heavily armed thugs, let me get through my description because I put a lot of wit into these, and I'll try to keep them as brief as possible, Chris. Armed thugs. This all-encompassing profit-mongering organization took his supposedly brain-dead body and turned him into a cybernetic keeper of the peace, RoboCop. Yes, sir.
GCP?
Omni Consumer Products. GCP is the police force, but the company was. No. All right. Deep in the bowels of Raccoon City, this nefarious company masquerading as an innocent pharmaceutical and cosmetics company maintains miles and miles of subterranean laboratories where they experiment with all manner of lethal microorganisms for biowarfare, including one that would turn all of humanity into a Resident Evil.
I'm so far removed from Resident Evil now.
The Umbrella Corporation?
Yes.
The Umbrella Corporation. Very good.
Well done, sir.
Though not mentioned by name in the first two films of the franchise, this conglomerate corporation of the not-so-distant future became obsessed with militarizing a vicious species of xenomorphs discovered in a derelict alien spaceship on planetoid LV-426. That is, until Ridley Scott decided to reboot the franchise by kicking the whole juggernaut into reverse, backing over his own good works, making what had already devolved into a muddy mess that much more feckless and ridiculous. What was the name of the company?
Take a Japanese name and a not Japanese name right. together. Weyland Utani.
Yes!
Dang! He's on
good
fire!
Job. This oil company found in both the print and cinematic Marvel universes aided in the development of S.H.I.E.L.D., but became a bunch of corporate hooligans. In the print universe, they were responsible for the death of Tony Stark's parents. Spoilers! As yet, we don't know how that will play out in the MCU.
It's not Roxxon.
It is Roxxon Corporation. Good job. And lastly, seated deep within the satirical works of Thomas Pynchon, this defense contractor's name was ultimately borrowed by the red Lectroids of the Eighth Dimension, who were foiled in their plans for world domination by Buckaroo Banzai and his Hong Kong Cavaliers.
Oh, boy. Can I phone a husband?
No.
Dang.
Oh. No lifelines. Nobody? Yo-Yo Dyne Propulsion Systems.
Yo-Yo Dyne.
Yo-Yo Dyne.
All right.
Where are we going? Planet 10. When are we going to get there? Real soon.
All right. Well, thank you, Cole. Thank you for listening and or watching. And that is our show. And we will see you next week.